nary a casualty to a single knot of carpet. The group took their aperitifs onto the terrace to enjoy the sunset view. Now that Gao Liang had unburdened himself of all he needed to say, the mood had lightened considerably. Eddie stood at one end with Gao Liang, pointing out the houses of every famous tycoon who lived on Victoria Peak, and estimating the value of their properties, while Rachel and Nick perched at the corner, looking down toward the water. "How are you feeling, hun?" Nick asked, still concerned about how Rachel was handling everything.
"I feel good.
I'm so glad I've cleared the air with my father. I'm just ready to go home now." "Well, Commander Kwok said we could leave at the end of the week if nothing new develops. I promise we'll go home as soon as we possibly can," Nick said, wrapping his arms around her as they looked at the lights coming on all over the city. Later that evening, while Nick, Rachel, and Gao Liang were in the middle of dinner with Eddie and his mother, Alex, at the Lock Club, Gao Liang's cell phone began to ring. Seeing that it was the Shanghai chief of police calling, he excused himself from the table and went out to the foyer to take the call. A few moments later, he came back to the table with an urgent look on his face.
"There's been a huge break in the case, and an arrest has been made. They want us to come back to Shanghai immediately."
Rachel felt her gut tense up. "Do I really need to be there?"
"Apparently, they need you to identify someone,"
Gao Liang said gravely. A little over 3 hours later, Rachel, Nick, and Gao Liang were back in Shanghai, speeding along in a chauffeured Audi to the central police station on Fuzhou Lu.
"Still no word from Carlton?" Rachel asked.
No,
Gao Liang said tersely. He had been trying to contact Carlton and Shaoyan even before the chartered jet had departed from Hong Kong, but their phones were both going straight to voicemail. Now he was nervously hitting the redial button to no avail. They arrived at the station and were escorted upstairs to a reception room ablaze in fluorescent lights. An officer with magnificently droopy jowls came into the room and bowed to Rachel's father.
"Bao Buzang, thank you for returning so speedily. Is this Ms. Chu?"
"Yes," Rachel said.
"I'm Inspector Zhang. We are going to take you into an interrogation room, and we would like you to tell us if the person we are holding appears familiar to you. You will see them behind a two-way mirror, and they will not be able to see or hear you. So please do not be afraid to speak up. Am I making myself clear?"
"Yes." "Can my husband come in with me?"
"No, that won't be possible. But don't worry, you will be with me and several other officers. Nothing is going to happen."
"We'll be right out here, Rachel."
Nick squeezed her hand encouragingly. Rachel nodded and went along with the officer. There were two other detectives already in the first room when she entered. One of them pulled at a cord, and the blinds over a viewing window were lifted.
"Do you recognize this person?"
Inspector Zhang asked. Rachel could feel her heart beating furiously in her throat.
"Yes. Yes, I do. He was the man who was rowing our boat on the West Lake in Hangzhou."
"He's not a real boatman. He paid off the regular boatman so that he could poison the tea you drank while you were on the boat ride."
"Oh my God. I forgot all about that Long Jing tea," Rachel said in astonishment. "But who is he? Why in the world would he want to poison me?"
"We're not done yet, miss. Come into the next room."
Rachel walked into the adjoining room, and the officer opened up another set of blinds. Rachel's eyes widened in disbelief.
"I don't understand. What's she doing here?"
"Do you know her?"
"That's..." Rachel stammered. "That's Roxanne Ma, Colette Bing's personal assistant."
Chapter 14. Central Police Station, Fuzhou Lu, Shanghai. Nick and Gao Liang were allowed to join Rachel in the viewing booth as Roxanne was subjected to the official interrogation.
For the millionth time, I keep telling you it was a horrible mistake. I was just trying to send Rachel a little message, that's all, Roxanne said wearily.
You thought poisoning a woman with a highly potent drug that shut down her kidneys and liver and could have led to her death was a way to send someone a little message? Inspector Zhang asked incredulously.
It wasn't supposed to be like that. The drug was just supposed to make her vomit for a while and have really bad stomach cramps. It makes you feel like you're dying when you're not actually.
The plan was to send Rachel the flowers along with the note right when she arrived at the hospital in Hangzhou. But before we could get the lilies to her, she had been checked out of the hospital and evacuated to Hong Kong. How the hell was I supposed to know that was going to happen?
So why did you wait so long after she was admitted to Queen Mary Hospital in Hong Kong before you sent the note?
I had no idea where they took her. She just disappeared. We were frantically searching for her everywhere. I had people in Shanghai, Beijing, all the top regional hospitals looking for her. But we had to wait till her admission record popped up somewhere. It was never the intention to let things get as bad as they did. I just wanted to scare her and make her leave the country. The plan went terribly wrong.
But why would you want to try to scare Rachel Chu in the first place?
I told you this already. Colette was extremely distraught that Carlton Bao might lose part of his inheritance to Rachel.
Gao Liang's jaw dropped when he heard this, while Rachel and Nick looked at each other in confusion.
Why would this happen? Inspector Zhang continued.
Bao Gao Liang and his wife were furious after finding out all the reckless things their son did in Paris.
Reckless things that were discussed during the dinner at Imperial Treasure?
Yes. The Baos got into a fight about Carlton, and Bao Gao Liang threatened to disinherit him.
This fight occurred in the presence of Colette Ming and yourself?
No. The fight happened after we left the room. I had intentionally left Colette's iPhone in the room with the record mode on, and I went back to collect it later.
Gao Liang put his hands to his forehead, shaking his head in disgust.
And that's when you discovered the Baos talking about disinheriting Carlton?
Yes. It was a tremendous shock for Colette. She thought she was helping to smooth things out between Carlton and his parents, but instead it made things far worse. See, I told her, no good deed goes unpunished.
Why would Colette Bing care if Carlton Bao gets disinherited?
Isn't it obvious? She's pathetically in love with the loser.
So Colette Bing ordered all this to happen?
No, she didn't. I keep telling you, she didn't. Colette was just very upset after realizing that she had put Carlton in jeopardy. She couldn't stop crying, and she couldn't stop cursing Rachel Chu, so I told her I would fix things.
Then she did know of your plan to poison Rachel.
No! Colette never knew what I was going to do. I just told her I would handle it.
This was such an important mission, and Colette had nothing to do with it?
Nothing at all!
And it wasn't an important mission.
Stop trying to protect Colette Bing. She ordered you to do this, didn't she? This was her plan all along, and you were just the minion who did all the dirty work.
I am not her minion. I am her personal assistant. Do you know what that entails? I manage a direct staff of 42 employees and a support staff of countless more. I make $650,000 a year.
Colette Bing pays you so much money, and yet she does not know everything that you do for her? I find that very hard to believe.
Roxanne glared at the inspector contemptuously. What do you know about billionaires? Do you even know one? Do you have any idea how they live? Colette Bing is one of the richest women in the world, and she's an extremely busy and influential person. Her fashion blog is followed every minute of the day by more than 35 million people,
and she's about to become the international brand ambassador for one of the biggest fashion companies. Her schedule is packed. She has at least 3 or 4 social functions that she's required to show her face at every single night. She has 6 residences, 3 planes, 10 cars, and she's traveling somewhere every week. Do you think she keeps track of everything that's going on all the time? She's too busy having important meetings with world-famous people like Ai Weiwei and Pan Tingting. My job is to make sure that everything in her professional and personal life goes smoothly. I post all her pictures to her blog. I negotiate all her contracts. I make sure her dog's feces are the correct shade of maple sugar brown. I see to it that every floral arrangement in 6 houses and 3 planes are exquisitely perfect at all times. Do you even know how many floral designers we have on the payroll and the dramas they have? Those bitches could have their own reality show with all the conniving and backstabbing that goes on just to get one compliment out of Colette about some fucking delphiniums. Every single day, I have to make 1,000,001 annoying little problems she's never even aware of go away. So Rachel Chu was just an annoying little problem that needed to go away? Roxanne gave Inspector Zhang an indignant look. I was just doing my job. Nick turned to Rachel in utter disgust.
Let's get out of here. I've heard more than enough.
The 3 of them left the police headquarters, and as their SUV drove along the darkened roads of Huangpu, they sat in silence, each contemplating everything that had just transpired. Sitting in the front passenger seat, Bao Gaoliang was a jumble of emotions. He was sickened by Roxanne and Colette, but even more angry at and ashamed of himself. It was all his fault. He had allowed things to spiral out of control with Shaoyan. And as the secrets and lies spun around Carlton became a dangerously tangled web, Rachel was the innocent victim who got caught in it. Rachel, who wanted nothing from him except to get to know him and his family. She deserved so much better. She didn't deserve to be exposed to a family as diseased as his. Nick appeared to be sitting placidly in the back seat with his arm around Rachel, but inside he was seething with fury. That fucking Colette. She was the one who was ultimately culpable for causing Rachel so much pain, and he wanted her to feel the heat along with Roxanne. It was an outrage that Roxanne would be going to jail while Colette got away scot-free. The rich and well-connected were always untouchable. He knew that only too well. But if Rachel hadn't been sitting beside him right now, he would have hightailed it to Colette's house and shoved her face into that ridiculous reflecting pool, with Celine Dion blaring full blast. Leaning her head against Nick's broad shoulder, Rachel remained the calmest of the trio. From the moment Roxanne began talking in that interrogation cell, Rachel started to feel a tremendous sense of relief. The ordeal was over. There wasn't some crazy, irrational stranger after her. It was just the crazy personal assistant of her brother's girlfriend, someone she now felt only intense pity for. All she wanted at this moment was to get to their hotel. She wanted to slip into that luscious bed with the down pillows and silken frette sheets and just go to sleep. As their Audi turned onto Henan South Road, Nick noticed that they were going in the opposite direction of their hotel. "Aren't we heading away from the Bund?" he asked Gaoliang.
"Yes, we are."
"I'm not taking you to the peninsula. You're going to be staying at my house tonight, where you should have been all along." They entered a quieter residential area lined with plane trees whose branches created leafy archways over the streets, and the car pulled up outside a gatehouse by a high stone wall. A black wrought iron gate was opened by a police guard, and the car proceeded along a short curving driveway to a beautiful French manor-style house ablaze in lights. As the SUV rolled up the circular front driveway,
The tall oak doors opened and three women came scurrying down the steps.
Hello, Ah Ting. Is my wife home?
Gao Liang said to his head housekeeper.
Yes, she's retired upstairs for the evening.
This is my daughter and her husband. Could you please call the peninsula and make sure their luggage is brought here immediately? And see that a late supper is prepared for them. Maybe some fishball noodle soup? Ah Ting gawked at Rachel in utter shock.
His daughter?
Please see that the blue bedroom is made comfortable for them, Gao Liang instructed.
The blue bedroom?
Ah Ting asked. The blue bedroom was used only for honored guests. That's what I said, Gao Liang said forcefully, glancing up at the second floor and noticing his wife's silhouette in the window. Ah Ting hesitated for a moment, as if she was going to say something, but then she turned and started barking orders at the two younger maids. Gao Liang smiled at Rachel and Nick. It's been a very long day. I hope you don't mind if I bid you good night now. See you in the morning.
Good night,
Rachel and Nick said in unison, as they watched Gao Liang disappear into the house. Rachel found herself woken up by a shrill chirping outside the window. Sunlight filtered through the curtains, casting gauzy shadows onto the soft lilac blue walls. Rolling out of the four-poster bed, she walked toward the window and discovered a bird's nest tucked in the eave of the gabled roof. Three hungry little chicks arched their tiny beaks skyward, eager to be fed breakfast by their mother, who fluttered around the nest protectively. She ran to get her iPhone, and leaning daringly out of the dormer window, she tried to capture a good shot of the mama bird, which had a distinctive black head, gray body, and a smart dash of blue along her wings. Rachel took a few snaps, and as she put her camera phone down, she was startled by the sight of a lady in a pale yellow mandarin collared dress, standing in the middle of the garden, staring up intently at her. It had to be Carlton's mother. Caught off guard, Rachel blurted out.
Good morning.
Good morning,
the lady replied a little tersely. Then she said in a more relaxed tone,
You found the magpies.
Yes, I took some pictures,
Rachel said, immediately feeling a little foolish for stating the obvious.
Coffee?
The woman said.
Thank you. I'll be right down,
Rachel replied. She tiptoed around the room for a few minutes, trying not to disturb Nick, as she brushed her teeth, pulled her hair into a ponytail, and fretted about what she should wear. Oh, this was ridiculous. The lady had already seen her in her oversized Knicks jersey and Knicks old boxers. A thought occurred to her. Was that lady even Carlton's mother? She threw on a simple embroidered white cotton summer dress and walked gingerly down the graceful curving staircase. Why was she suddenly so nervous? She knew that the Baos had talked till the early hours. There were muffled voices echoing every now and then down the hallway from their guest room. Where was she supposed to meet the lady? As she peeked around the stately reception rooms on the ground floor, which were filled with an elegant mix of French and Chinese antiques, she wondered what Carlton's mother was going to say to her now after all that had happened. Carlton's words in Paris suddenly echoed in her mind.
My mother would rather die than let you set foot in her house.
A maid passing along a corridor with a silver coffee carafe stopped when she saw Rachel poking around.
This way, ma'am,
she said, leading her through a set of French doors onto a wide flagstone terrace, where the lady from the garden sat at a dark rosewood bistro table. Rachel walked toward her slowly, her throat suddenly going dry. The lady watched the girl come out onto the terrace.
So this is my husband's daughter. The girl who almost died because of Carlton.
And as the girl came into focus, a revelation.
My God, she looks just like him. She's his sister.
And just like that, all the fears she had bottled up so deeply, all the thoughts that had been tearing her up inside, instantly became meaningless. Rachel approached the table, and the lady stood up and extended her hand.
I'm Bao Xiaoyan. Welcome to my home. I'm Rachel Chu. It's a pleasure to be here.
Chapter 15. Rideout Road, Singapore. When Astrid returned from Friday night dinner at Tyersal Park, Led Zeppelin was blasting at an eardrum-shattering level on the sound system in Michael's study. She carried a sleepy Cassian upstairs to his bedroom and handed him over to his au pair.
How long has it been like this?
She asked.
I only got home an hour ago, madam. It was Metallica then,
Ludovine dutifully reported. Astrid shut the door to Cassian's bedroom firmly and went back downstairs. She peeked into the study and found Michael sitting in the dark in his Arne Jacobsen armchair.
Do you mind turning it down a little? Cassian's sleeping and it's past midnight.
Michael turned off the stereo with one click and remained motionless in his chair. She could tell he had been drinking, and not wanting to pick a fight, she ventured cheerily.
You missed a good time tonight.
Uncle Alfred suddenly had a mad craving for durians, so we all dashed off to 717 Trading on Upper Serangoon Road to get some.
I wish you could have been there.
Everybody knows you pick the best durians. Michael snorted derisively. If you think I'm going to sit there and make idle conversation with Uncle Alfred and your father about durians. Astrid came into the room, turned on a lamp, and sat down on the ottoman facing him.
Listen, you can't keep avoiding my father like this. Sooner or later, you're going to have to make peace with him.
Why should I make peace when he was the one who started the war?
What war? We've been over this so many times, and I've told you I know for a fact that my father did not buy your company.
But let's say for argument's sake that he did. What difference would that make at this point? You took that money and quadrupled it. You've already proven to everyone, to my father, to my family, to the world, what a genius you are. Can't you be happy with that?
You weren't there that morning on the golf course. You didn't hear the things your father said to me. The contempt in his voice. He has looked down on me from the very beginning, and he will never stop.
Astrid sighed.
My father looks down on everyone. Even his own children. That's just the way he is. And if you haven't figured that out by now, I don't know what to tell you.
I want you to stop going to Friday night dinner. I want you to stop seeing your parents every damn week.
Michael announced.
Astrid paused for a moment. You know I would do that if I thought it made any difference. I know you've been unhappy, Michael. But I also know that your unhappiness actually has very little to do with my family.
You're right about that. I think I'd be happier if you would also stop cheating on me.
Astrid laughed.
You really are drunk.
I'm not drunk at all.
I've only had 4 whiskies.
Either way, I'm not drunk enough to ignore the truth when I see it. Astrid looked him in the eye, unsure if he was being serious or not.
You know, Michael, I'm trying so hard to be patient with you for the sake of our marriage, but you really aren't making it easy.
So you've been fucking Charlie Wu for the sake of our marriage?
Charlie Wu? What in the world would make you think I'm cheating on you with Charlie?
Astrid asked, wondering if he had somehow discovered the real truth about his company.
I've known about you and Charlie from the very start.
If you're talking about that weekend road trip we took in California with Alistair, you're being ridiculous, Michael. You know we're just old friends.
Just old friends.
Oh, Charlie, you are the one person who truly understands me,
Michael said in a mocking girlish voice. Astrid felt a chill go up her spine.
How long have you been eavesdropping on my phone calls?
Since the beginning, Astrid. And your emails, too. I've read every email you've ever exchanged with him.
How? Why?
My wife spent 2 weeks in Hong Kong with one of my top competitors back in 2010. You don't think I'm going to look into that? I was a surveillance specialist for the government. I have all the resources right at my fingertips. Michael bragged coldly. For a long moment, Astrid was too shocked and outraged to move. She stared at Michael, wondering who this man was in front of her. She used to think he was the most handsome man on the planet, but now he looked almost demonic. At that moment, Astrid realized she could no longer live under the same roof with him. She bolted out of her seat and walked down the breezeway past the reflecting pool to the staircase that led to Cassian's bedroom. She ran up the stairs and knocked on Ludovine's door.
Yes, come in.
Astrid opened the door and saw Ludovine lying on her bed, FaceTiming with some surfer dude on her laptop.
Ludovine, please pack an overnight bag for yourself and for Cassian. We are leaving for my mother's house.
When?
Right now.
From there, Astrid ran to her bedroom and grabbed her wallet and car keys. As she came downstairs with Ludovine and Cassian, Michael was standing in the middle of the great hall, leering at them. She handed the car keys to Ludovine and whispered,
"Get in the car with Cassian. If I'm not out in 5 minutes, drive straight to Nassim Road."
"Ludovine, don't you dare fucking move or I'll motherfucking break your neck," Michael shouted.
The au pair froze, and Cassian stared at his father wide-eyed. Astrid glared at him. "Nice language in front of your son, Michael. You know, for the longest time I really tried. I thought we could save this marriage for the sake of our son. But the fact that you would invade my privacy in such a fundamental way has shown me how broken our marriage is. You don't respect me. And more importantly, you don't trust me. You've never trusted me. So why do you want to stop us now? Deep down, you know I'm no longer the wife you want. You just won't admit it to yourself." Michael ran to the front door and blocked it. He grabbed a 15th-century Bavarian poleaxe from the wall and waved it threateningly at Astrid.
"You can go to hell for all I care, but you're not taking my son. If you leave this house now, I'm going to call the police and tell them you have kidnapped him. Cassian, get over here."
Cassian started to cry, and Ludovine held on to him tightly, muttering under her breath,
"C'est des putains de conneries.
This is fucking bullshit.
Sounds so civilized in French, doesn't it?"
"Stop it. You're scaring him,"
Astrid said angrily.
"I'm going to drag you and your entire family through the mud. You're going to see yourself on the front page of the Straits Times. I'll sue you for adultery and desertion. I have all the emails and phone recordings to prove it," Michael snarled.
"If you've read all my emails, you should know that I haven't written a single inappropriate thing to Charlie. Not one word. He has been nothing but a good friend to me. He's been a better friend than you could possibly ever imagine," Astrid said, her voice cracking with emotion.
"Yes, I know you've been very careful in covering your tracks, but that home wrecker Charlie hasn't."
"What do you mean?" "It's so obvious, Astrid. The guy is so crazy in love with you, it's fucking sad. All his emails read like pathetic love letters."
In a flash, it occurred to Astrid that what Michael said was true. Every casual email, every text message Charlie had ever written to her was a testament to his love. He had never broken his promise. Not since the day they were at Abelard and Eloise's tomb in Paris. Suddenly, Astrid was flooded with a power that made her more courageous than ever.
"Michael, if you don't move away from the front door right now, I swear to God, I will call the police myself."
"Go ahead. We can both be in the fucking papers tomorrow morning.
Michael screamed. Astrid got out her phone and dialed 999, all the while smiling calmly.
Michael, don't you know by now that my grandmother and Uncle Alfred are the largest private shareholders of Singapore Press Holdings? We're not going to be in the papers. We're never going to be in the papers.
Chapter 16. 188 Tai Yuan Road, Shanghai.
Why do I have to find out from Eleanor Young that my own daughter almost died?
Carrie Chu scolded into the phone.
I didn't almost die, Mom,
Rachel said, stretched out on a chaise lounge in her bedroom at the Bao residence.
Hiya. Eleanor said you were on your deathbed.
I'm going to catch the first flight to Shanghai tomorrow.
You don't need to come, Mom. I can assure you I was never in any danger, and I'm perfectly fine now.
Rachel laughed, trying to downplay it.
Why didn't Nick call me sooner? Why am I the last to know everything?
I was only in the hospital for a few days, and since I got back to normal so quickly, I really didn't see any reason to worry you.
And since when have you started believing everything Eleanor tells you? Are you best buddies now?
We are nothing of the sort. But she calls me several times a week now, and I have no choice but to take her calls.
Wait a minute. Why is she calling you several times a week?
Hiya. Ever since she found out at the wedding that I sell houses to all the tech people in Cupertino and Palo Alto, she's been calling me for hot tips on tech stocks. And then she keeps hassling me for news about you. Every few days, she wants to know if there's any news.
News about our trip?
No. She couldn't care less about your trip. She wants to know if you're pregnant, of course.
Oh, God, now it begins, Rachel muttered under her breath. Seriously, wouldn't it be nice to say you conceived a baby in Shanghai? I hope you and Nick have been trying very hard.
Rachel made a sound like she was choking.
Ugh, stop. I don't want to be having this conversation with you, Mom. Please, boundaries.
What do you mean, boundaries? You came out of my vagina. What kind of boundaries do we have?
You're already 32, and if you don't start having your babies now, when are you going to start?
Duly noted, Mom. Duly noted.
Carrie sighed.
So what happened to the girl who tried to poison you? Are they going to hang her?
Oh, God, I have no idea. I hope not.
What do you mean you hope not?
She tried to kill you.
Rachel sighed.
It's more complicated than that. I can't really explain it all over the phone, Mom. It's a long story, one that could only happen in China.
You keep forgetting I'm from China, daughter. I know much more about the country than you do,
Carrie said in annoyance.
Of course, Mom, I didn't mean it that way. But you just don't know the people and the circumstances that I've been exposed to since getting here,
Rachel said, feeling a sadness come over her as she thought about her encounter with Colette earlier that week. The morning after they had returned to Shanghai, Rachel had been bombarded with voicemails from Colette.
Oh my God, Rachel, I am so, so sorry. I don't know what to say. I just found out about Roxanne and everything. Please call me back.
Followed very shortly by,
Rachel, where are you? Can I please see you? I called the peninsula, and they said you never checked in. Are you with the Bows? Call me back, please.
Half an hour later.
Hi, it's me again, Colette. Is Carlton with you? I'm really worried for him. He's completely disappeared and not returning my calls or texts. Please call me.
And then in the afternoon, a tearful voice message.
Rachel, I really hope and pray that you know I had nothing to do with this. Nothing at all. Please believe me. This is just horrible. Please let me explain.
Nick felt strongly that Rachel should not return any of Colette's calls. You know, I really don't believe that she's as innocent as Roxanne claims. She's ultimately responsible for what happened to you, and I'd just as soon never see or hear from her again. Rachel was more sympathetic.
Say what you want about her being an obscenely spoiled princess, but you can't say she hasn't been nice to us. I just don't want to ever see you get hurt again, that's all, Nick said, his brow furrowed with worry.
I know, but I don't believe Colette really wanted to see me hurt, and I certainly don't think she's going to hurt me now. I feel like I owe it to her to at least hear her out.
At 5 o'clock the next afternoon, Rachel walked into the Waldorf Astoria Hotel on the Bund, tailed discreetly by two of Bao Gao Liang's security men that Nick insisted accompany her. She made her way to the Grand Brasserie, a magnificent space framed by an elliptical mezzanine, tall marble columns that rose up to the second floor, and a stunningly landscaped interior courtyard. Colette got out of her seat and rushed toward Rachel the minute she saw her.
I'm so glad you came. I didn't know if you would, Colette said, hugging her tightly.
Of course I would, Rachel said.
They have a fabulous high tea here. You must try the scones. They're just like the ones at Claridge's. Now, what tea do you feel like today? I think I'll have the Darjeeling. That's always the best.
Colette fluttered nervously. I'll have whatever you're having, Rachel said, trying to put her at ease. She noticed that Colette was dressed in a completely different manner than she had ever seen her. In an austerely elegant gray and white dress, accessorized with nothing but a Maltese cross made out of old cabochon emeralds. She wore less makeup than usual, and her eyes appeared to be swollen from crying.
Rachel, you must believe me when I say that I had no idea Roxanne was going to do what she did. It was as much a shock to me as it must have been to you. I never, ever ordered Roxanne to do anything that would harm you. Nothing at all. You believe me, don't you? Please say you believe me.
I believe you, Rachel said.
Oh, thank God. Thank God, Colette sighed. For a while there, I thought you were going to hate me forever.
I could never hate you, Colette, Rachel said gently, placing her hand over Colette's. Two steaming pots of tea arrived, along with a tall silver stand overflowing with daintily cut triangles of sandwiches, scones, and a decadent array of sweet confections. As Colette began piling glistening pastries and fluffy warm scones onto Rachel's plate, she continued to explain herself.
Roxanne was the one who came up with the idea of eavesdropping on the bows after we left. It was all her idea. But then, when we heard their conversation, I was in shock, that's all. All I could think of was that I had hurt Carlton, that I had made things far worse for him. And in that moment, just that one moment, I got really upset, not at you, but at the whole situation. And Roxanne misinterpreted my feelings.
Boy, she really misinterpreted, Rachel remarked.
Yes, she did. Roxanne and I, we have a complicated relationship. She's worked for me for 5 years now. She was an 18th birthday present from my father, and she knows me inside out. Before she came to work for me, she had a miserable job at PJ Whitney, and she's so thankful to me, she doesn't have anything else. I'm her whole life. She's like that Helen Mirren character in Gosford Park, the ultimate housekeeper. She can anticipate my needs even before I know what they are. And she does things all the time that she thinks are good for me, even when I don't ask her. But she crossed the line. She really crossed the line. I hope you know I fired her. I sent her a text message firing her the minute I found out everything.
Yeah, I'm sure she gets great Wi-Fi in her prison cell, Rachel thought. What I'm not clear on, Colette, is why you got so upset over Carlton potentially losing some of his inheritance. Why does it matter to you so much? Colette looked down at her plate and began to pick at the raisins on a scone.
I don't think you know the pressures I've had to face in my life. I know how fortunate I am. Believe me, I do. But with this fortune has come tremendous burdens. I'm the only child,
And ever since I was born, my parents have had these great expectations of me. They gave me the best of everything. The best schools, the best doctors. You know, my mother sent me to get my eyelids done when I was 6. Through my teens, there was always some surgery done on me every year to make me look prettier. But in return, they have always expected me to be the best. To be the top performer in school, to be the best of everything. I thought that they were priming me to succeed in business, but it turns out all they want is for me to get married and start giving them grandsons. To them, I am a crown princess, and they only want me to marry a crown prince. Richie Yang was their hand-picked choice, and they were so angry when I turned him down. But I don't love him, Rachel. I love Carlton. I'm sure you've always known that. And even though I'm not ready to get married, I want Carlton to be the one when I am ready. I can picture myself with him. He's got that wonderful accent, and the height, and that beautiful face. We would have the most beautiful children together. My father doesn't see any of that. He doesn't understand someone like Carlton. He only gets traditional types like Richie. So Carlton is already in a tough spot. And if he were to lose his fortune, even a small part of it, it would only further diminish my father's view of him. And it would make it even more impossible for me to marry him one day. But your family already has so much, more than enough for 100 lifetimes. I know it can't make much sense to you, coming from where you do, but believe me, my father does not think he has enough, nowhere near.
Rachel shook her head in disgust. I hope you realize that you're going to have to stand up to your father at some point.
I realize that. I've already been doing that. I said no to Richie, remember? And now I'm trying to prove to my father that I can do just fine, thank you very much, without his money. I know he's testing me. He's always doing such things. And I know he's not going to cut me off for long. I mean, it's not like he's really going to stop paying the landscape architect at my country estate. But now I need your help. What can I do?
Colette's eyes brimmed with tears.
Carlton finally picked up the phone. He told me to stop calling him. He said so many horrid, horrid things. I don't even want to tell you. And he told me that he never wants to see me again. Can you believe it? I know he's just upset about what happened to you. I know he's feeling guilty, blaming himself in some way. Please, you've got to convince him that you're fine, and that we're friends, and that he doesn't have to be angry at me anymore. I have something very important to discuss with him, and I need to see him as soon as possible. Will you please help me?
Rachel sat quietly, watching the tears spill down Colette's cheeks. You know, I haven't seen Carlton since getting back to Shanghai. He hasn't spoken to me or his parents. I don't think he's ready to talk to anyone yet.
He'll talk to you, Rachel. And I know where he is. He's in the presidential suite at the Portman Ritz-Carlton. That's where he always hides out. Will you go and see him for me? Please?
I can't do that, Colette. I don't want to force Carlton into seeing me until he's ready. And I really don't think I should be getting in the middle of your relationship. Nothing I can say will make him stop feeling the way he wants to feel. You need to give him time to heal. And he needs to figure out for himself what he wants.
But he never knows what he wants. You have to tell him,
Colette pleaded.
I think the longer he broods about this, the more it will fester. Like his accident. He was already such a mess all the time when he was recovering from his accident. I don't want him to get into another mess in his head about this.
I don't know what to tell you, Colette. People are messy. Life gets messy. Things are not always going to work out perfectly just because you want them to.
That's not true. Things always end up working out for me,
Colette said impetuously.
Well, then I suppose you'll just have to trust that they will this time. So you're really not going to go over to the Portman?
I just don't see the point. Colette's eyes narrowed for a moment.
Oh, I get it.
You don't want me to get back with Carlton, do you?
That's not true.
Yes, I see now.
You want to punish me, don't you?
I don't understand. You're still angry about what happened to you.
Rachel gave Colette a look of frustration. I'm not angry at you. I felt sad for you, maybe, but I was never truly angry.
You felt sad for me?
Yes, I felt sad about the whole situation. That things would ever get to a point where Roxanne would feel the need. Colette suddenly slammed her fist onto the table.
How dare you feel sad for me? Who do you think you are?
Rachel jerked back in alarm. I didn't mean it as an insult, Colette. I just meant
I took pity on you, Rachel Chu.
I thought, here is this poor, pathetic orphan girl from America. I paid for your meals. I invited you to my house. You flew on my plane. I paid for the whole damn Paris trip. I gave you special access to the most exclusive places in the world and introduced you to all my important friends, and you can't even do one small favor for me.
My God, she's losing it.
Rachel tried to remain calm. Colette, I think you're being unreasonable here. I am grateful for all the generosity you have shown Nick and me, but I just don't think it's my place to tell Carlton to do anything, especially if it concerns his relationship with you.
You've never really been my friend, have you? I see you clearly now, in your cheap American clothes and your cheap little jewelry, Colette spat contemptuously.
Rachel stared at her in shock. Was this really happening? She could see that all the other well-manicured women in the dining room were gawking at them now. The two security guards rushed up behind Rachel's chair.
Is everything okay, miss?
You brought security? Who do you think you are? Oh, this is funny. Are you trying to imitate me now? Well, I have double the security detail that you do. Roxanne was right about you all along. You've been envious of me from day one, and you've been plotting to get Carlton away from me and away from his family. This works out perfectly for you, doesn't it? You want their money all to yourself. Well, you can have the pathetic $1.5 billion for all I care. That's nothing compared to what my family has. You're never in your life going to come close to touching me. All the money in the world is never going to buy you my style or my taste, because you'll always be common. You're nothing but a common little bastard.
Rachel sat completely still for a moment, feeling her face get white hot, deciding that she wasn't going to endure one more second of Colette's deranged abuse. She pushed her chair back and got up from the table. You know, this is beyond absurd. For a while there, I actually felt bad for you, even though I was violently ill for a week because of your actions. But now, I have nothing but pity for you. You're right. I will never be like you. Thanks so much for the compliment. You're nothing more than a spoiled, entitled little shit. And unlike you, I'm proud of my roots. I'm not talking about my birth father. I'm talking about the honest, hard-working mother who raised me, and the amazing family that supported her. We didn't make some crazy fortune overnight, and we won't ever need to hire some fancy butler to teach us manners. You don't live in the real world. You never have. So I'm not even going to try arguing with you. It's way below my pay grade to bother. You sit in your perfect little eco-luxury bubble, while your father's companies are the biggest polluters in China. You may have all the money in the world, but you are the most morally impoverished child I've ever met. Grow up, Colette, and get a life. With that, Rachel walked out of the hotel and onto the Bund, followed closely by the two bodyguards. Shall we call the car, miss? One of them asked.
You know, if you don't mind, I'd like to get some fresh air. I think I'll be fine from here. I'll see you guys back at the house.
Rachel began walking down the famous curved boulevard, looking up at the gleaming Art Deco buildings and the red Chinese flags fluttering above them. As she passed the happy bride and groom getting their picture taken outside the Peace Hotel, Her phone began to ring. It was Carlton.
Rachel, are you okay?
He said, sounding anxious and euphoric at the same time.
Of course. Why? That fight you just had with Colette.
How did you know about that? Rachel gasped.
Someone videoed the whole thing on their phone from the mezzanine right above your table. It's gone viral on WeChat. Spoilt bitch epic takedown. That's what they've named it.
Blimey. 9 million views already. Chapter 17. Newspapers around the world. Los Angeles Daily News. Mar Vista child kidnapped in private jet. Breaking news. Van Nuys Airport was the scene of a high-speed chase last night at around 9:50 when LAPD officers pursued a private jet containing a 2.5-year-old kidnapping victim as it sped down runway 16R. At least 4 squad cars were involved in pursuing the jet but failed to prevent it from taking off and leaving U.S. airspace. Minutes before, the child's father, Bernard Tai, had made a frantic 911 call reporting that his daughter Giselle had been kidnapped from their home at 11950 Victoria Avenue in Mar Vista. Giselle's babysitter allowed an unidentified woman into the home while Tai was out, and the woman departed with the child. By the time the police had tracked down Giselle at Van Nuys Airport, she was already aboard the private aircraft. Tai, who is a Singapore citizen but resides in Los Angeles, gave his occupation as unemployed and told LAPD that he was Giselle's full-time caregiver. Tai was unreachable for further comment. LAPD would not release any more information about the jet pending further investigation. Los Angeles Times. Child heiress kidnapped by her mother. Los Angeles. In a startling new development in the mysterious private jet kidnapping of a Mar Vista child 2 days ago, the Los Angeles Times has learned that the kidnapping victim, Giselle Tai, was taken by her mother, former Hong Kong soap opera actress Kitty Pong. Giselle is the sole heiress and only daughter of Bernard Tai, the president and non-executive vice chairman of TTL Holdings, which is headquartered in Hong Kong. Tai, who told LAPD that he was unemployed, is said to be worth over $4 billion and maintains lavish residences around the world. He is also the owner of the 388-foot mega-yacht Kitties Galore. However, for the past 2 years, Tai and his family have quietly resided in a 2,807-square-foot house in the upper-middle-class neighborhood of Mar Vista.
I always suspected Bernard had money, but I never knew he had that kind of money. I knew he moved to Mar Vista because he wanted to raise his daughter in the most conscious way possible. He's a terrific father. I never once met the wife.
Said Linda C. Scout, who took a NIA class with Tai. 2 nights ago, Tai's personal chef, Mila Linyel, who resides at the house and was babysitting that evening, allowed the child's mother, Kitty Pong, into the home. Pong, who is currently estranged from her husband and lives in Hong Kong, removed her daughter from the house.
Madame asked me to make her an omelette, and it only took me 5 minutes. But by the time the omelette was ready, Madame and Giselle had disappeared, said a tearful Linyel.
Tai knew something was wrong when he was served with divorce papers in the middle of a sound bath healing workshop in Santa Monica. After speaking with Ms. Linyel, he immediately suspected that his wife intended to leave the country with their daughter. LAPD has confirmed that Tai activated a secret GPS tracking device in Giselle's Tom's shoes that also alerted the police. The police pursued the child to Van Nuys Airport, but it was too late to stop the private Boeing 747-81. Officer Scott Ishihara, who was on the scene, calmly noted, "We gave chase, but it's hard to stop a 450-ton jumbo jet from taking off if it wants to." Tai, who has filed kidnapping charges against his wife in Los Angeles, has apparently left the country. Calls to TTL's corporate headquarters in Hong Kong were unreturned. South China Morning Post. Kitty Tai escaped with daughter on mainland billionaire's plane.
Hong Kong. The Los Angeles Police Department, together with officials at Van Nuys Airport in Los Angeles, can now confirm that the Boeing 747-81 used in the alleged kidnapping of heiress Giselle Tai by her mother Kitty Tai was owned by Chinese industrialist Jack Bing. Mr. Bing, who is said to be worth upward of $21 billion, apparently lent Mrs. Tai his $350 million jet at the behest of a mutual friend. Mr. Bing's spokesperson today issued this statement. Mr. Bing lends his planes from time to time to various individuals and organizations on humanitarian grounds. Mr. Bing is not acquainted with Mrs. Tai in any way, but was urged to provide the plane for what he understood to be a humanitarian rescue mission. Neither Mr. Bing nor his family has played any role whatsoever in what is a private family matter between the Tais. After a brief refueling stop in Shanghai, Bing's jet landed in Singapore, where representatives for Mrs. Tai say she intends to divorce Bernard Tai and sue for shared custody of her daughter. Tai, who arrived in Singapore earlier today, has already countersued and filed kidnapping charges in both Los Angeles and Singapore. Giving a brief statement after landing at Changi Airport, Tai, whose face appears to be drastically altered by cosmetic surgery, said, "My wife has never played an active role in the raising of our daughter, and this is a well-documented fact that can be confirmed just by looking at any society magazine to see all the events my wife attends in Asia while her daughter has been in Los Angeles. Giselle has spent most of her conscious life in Los Angeles, and she is missing out on valuable learning and developmental opportunities. This is a tragedy of epic proportions, and Giselle needs to be immediately returned to those who truly love her and care for her." Mrs. Tai was unavailable for comment. NoblesseMagazine.com.cn, the latest scoop from China's most trusted society columnist, Honey Chai. Is everyone sitting down? Because I have so many scoops for you that we might as well make a giant banana split. First scoop, and you heard it here first. Mrs. Bernard Tai, a.k.a. Kitty Pong, is the mistress of Jack Bing. Extremely reliable sources tell me that Pong and Bing have been carrying on for quite a while now. They met 2 years ago at, get this, the funeral of Kitty's father-in-law, Dato Tai To Liu. Tai was a great mentor of Bing's, and apparently sparks really flew at the crematorium when Jack met Kitty. Meanwhile, a devastated Mrs. Bing has reportedly checked into the health spa at Brenners Park Hotel in Baden-Baden, Germany. Colette Bing, who by all accounts is furious with her father, has also left Shanghai and was last seen canoodling with a certain notorious playboy at a club in Ibiza. Which brings me to my next hot scoop. Everyone on the planet has by now seen the leaked video of Colette's epic takedown by an unidentified woman. It's the video that made Pret A Couture cancel the multi-million dollar endorsement deal with Colette. I can now reveal that this woman, whose monologue has become a rallying cry for every non-billionaire in China, and unfortunately, there are still quite a few of us who didn't make it onto the Heron Wealth list, is none other than Rachel Chu, the sister of Colette's ex-paramour, Carlton Bao. Everyone still with me here? Anyway, the video also led to Carlton and Colette's breakup. And when I asked Carlton how he felt the other night at DR Bar, he gave me a frown and said, "What breakup? I've always said that Colette wasn't my girlfriend, but she was a good friend at a time I really needed one, and I wish her the best." That's a classy response in my book. Speaking of classy, Carlton's parents, Bao Gaoliang, and his wife Bao Xiaoyin, hosted a farewell dinner party at Yongfu Elite last night for his daughter Rachel Chu and her husband, Professor Nicholas Young, who would be heading back to New York shortly. There wasn't a dry eye in the splendid Art Deco room when Bao made an emotional toast to his long-lost daughter, recounting the harrowing story of his youth and how he rescued his infant daughter and her mother from the clutches of an abusive family. The glittering crowd of China's top political and financial powerhouse families clapped wildly after his speech,
including Hong Kong's tech titan, Charles Wu.
Wu, who stunned Le Tu Hong Kong by announcing his separation from his wife, Isabel, just weeks ago, spent the whole night glued to the side of a beautiful